Welcome to the Sunny Hill podcast. This message was recorded at our Ferndown campus. For more information about service times and locations, please visit sunnyhill.church.
So this is the final final message in our current series, Encounter. Before we start, Movie Month! That's the response I wanted. Don't forget, Movie Month is not about us coming to church to watch a movie. Although, would that really be a bad thing? No, I'm not so sure. That's not what we're doing. So the plan is to take a theme from a current blockbuster or from a classic movie and draw out biblical principles. Yeah, so, sorry, did you say something?
What's next week?
So next week, I am going to be opening from the gospel of Les Miserables. Who's seen Les Mis? Oh, most of you, great. And if you, it's a great book and a great film. Obviously, there's been lots of different films and TV series made of it. Same the story, and I'm going to be taking some biblical truths from that story next week and opening them out and hopefully making our lives better. And then in the preceding 3 weeks, it's going to be Richard's going to be coming over from Sunny Hill Pool. We're going to have Steve who's going to be speaking to us, and we're going to have Fru as well. With different films, okay? So it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. I love movies, and I love Jesus. Put them together into a Jesus movie sandwich. That's a real win for me. I love it. And also, we're going to be giving away snacks and treats for you to eat while I'm speaking. So it's like a triple-decker sandwich. Like, it's going to be really good. You don't want to miss next week. And invite your friends. We're just going to have such a great time together. So it's going to be a good one to invite people to. Yes, pigging out on your seats, munching away, dropping litter, all that stuff. Sorry? Who's going to do it? Erica said she's going to clean up afterwards. That's amazing. So no worries there. But we're not there yet, okay? Movie Month starts next week. We're not there yet. We've got our last message in this series, Encounter, what we've been looking at the last kind of 6 or 7 weeks. So we've been looking at encountering different aspects of Jesus' life, his ministry, and his character. Hopefully, we've learned some things that we didn't know before. Hopefully. Or maybe we've been reminded of things that we have forgotten. Because, you know, we do forget some stuff, don't we? Or I do, you know, and it's good to be reminded of the gospel and truths and about grace and about truth and about Jesus being the light of the world and Jesus being a great teacher. It's good to be reminded about who he is. But what we don't want to do, and what this series, I hope, has not been about, is just getting knowledge. We don't just want to get knowledge. The Bible tells us that knowledge puffs up. But love builds up. Knowledge puffs us. The knowledge makes us think we're better than we are. Knowledge makes us think we've got it made, that we've arrived. Whereas love, it builds us up and it builds others up and it builds the church up. And so the danger is that we can become so enamored with the knowledge that we get that we miss the whole point of our faith. We miss the whole point of being who Jesus called us to be. It's not a bad thing to get knowledge. It's not a bad thing to get understanding, but we have to apply these things through the filter of love. Otherwise, without love, it's a clanging gong, banging cymbal. Paul tells us in Corinthians. So that's where I want us to bring us today in this our final message. So help me out here, okay? I know an old lady who swallowed a goat. She opened her throat and swallowed the goat. She opened the goat to catch the
fly.
Not the fly yet. The dog. She swallowed the dog to catch the cat. She swallowed the cat to catch the bird. She swallowed the bird to catch the spider that wriggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. She swallowed the spider to catch the fly. I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die. Amazing. So the encounter we're looking at today is Jesus' famous encounter with the old lady who swallowed a fly. No, it's not. That doesn't exist. I'm joking. Okay, the encounter we're going to look at is Jesus goes to the home of a Pharisee. He gets invited to go and eat with a Pharisee, and then he proceeds to lay into him. He proceeds to tear some strips off him. And in fact, he calls him a blind guide. He says, you Pharisees, you're like the blind leading the blind. In fact, he says this, you blind guides straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel. So it's an encounter with someone who was careful not to swallow a fly. Okay, that was the link. I know it was tenuous at best. But in the process of being careful not to swallow a fly, Jesus tells him, you're swallowing a camel. Now, obviously, it's a metaphor, and we're going to unpack this a little bit later. So I want us to encounter Jesus through this series, but more than that, what I really want us to do is to get to a point where people encounter Jesus in us. That's the point. That's the point of the series. That's the whole message. We get to encounter Jesus, and then other people, everybody gets to encounter Jesus in us. So the title of my message today is Encounter Jesus in Us. But this is not happen automatically. The two things don't necessarily go hand in hand. It is possible to encounter Jesus on a Sunday and then not carry his presence with you throughout the rest of the week, not be his hands and feet, to not be like him on a Monday. It's possible for the love of Jesus to fade from us and the love of religion and tradition and rules to take its place. Now, I'm really not enamored with religion at all. When people find out that I'm a pastor, one of the first things they say is, oh, so you're religious? And I go, I really hope I'm not. I really do hope I'm not religious. Certainly not in the way that we know religiosity to be and religion to make people. Because Jesus, he showed love, he showed mercy, he showed compassion. He was the source of grace to the lost and the hurting and the sinful and the outcasts and the prostitutes and the tax collectors and those caught in adultery and the demon-possessed and the physically sick. We've seen it time and time again through this series, and we read it all the way through the Gospels. This is how Jesus encountered people. But these were not the only people that he encountered. When Jesus encountered Zacchaeus, we looked at this 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was brilliant. Zacchaeus, he wasn't expecting anything, but he was transformed by the encounter. Remember, he said, if I've cheated anyone, I'm going to give back 4 times what I've cheated today. He was transformed by his encounter. But in that same encounter, there were other people there at the same time. And what did they say? Well, they stood there like this, going, why has he gone to be the guest of a sinner? They encountered Jesus as well, but they had a completely different reaction. There's another time when Jesus asks another tax collector called Matthew, and he goes up to him and he says, come and follow me. Come and be my disciple. And Matthew does. He drops everything. And that evening, it says, Jesus goes to his house for a party. And Matthew invites all his tax collector buddies along with him. And Jesus is there partying with all these guys, and they're having a brilliant time. But they're not the only people there. Because in the same passage, there are people who come up to Jesus and say, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? They encountered Jesus, but they had a different response. And then last week, we saw the woman who was caught in adultery. She came to Jesus broken, hurting, at the lowest point of her life. And her encounter with Jesus left her transformed, free from condemnation, free to walk away, a changed woman. But in that same passage, we read these other people who were there, who wanted to condemn her, who wanted to trap Jesus. They all had an encounter. They had different responses. There's a point in the Bible where Jesus heals a paralyzed man. And the man, after his encounter with Jesus, picks up his mat and he walks away. Forgiven. Changed. But in that same passage, there were other people there, the religious leaders. It says they were cross. They were angry. Who is this man who thinks he can forgive sins? This fellow's blaspheming. They all had an encounter, but they had a different response. And then Steve, a few weeks ago, he spoke about Jesus meeting that guy who was possessed by all those demons. And he sent him into the pigs. Remember that? That man was free. He'd been possessed for much of his life. And then he was free and whole again. But in the same passage, there were people there who said, they were full of fear and said to Jesus, you need to leave. You've got to go. You can't stay here. They all had an encounter. The guy who was possessed and was now free said, can I stay with you? Can I be with you from now on? And the other people said, you need to go. I can't be with you. They all had an encounter, different responses. The people who Jesus ate with, who he forgave, who he healed, these were the worst kind of people. These were the worst kind of sinners. It's really important that we understand this. What is the worst kind of sinner in your opinion? Who is the worst kind of person? Is it somebody who cheats old people out of their benefit? Is it somebody, a young man who goes out and mugs old ladies? Or maybe worse, is it somebody who kills somebody else? Or even bigger, somebody who commits genocide? What's the worst kind of sinner? Is it somebody who has inappropriate pictures of kids on their computer? Or somebody who distributes or makes those pictures? What's the worst kind of sinner in your imagination? Where's the line that we have in our own minds that says, grace goes this far, but no further? It goes this far, but it doesn't go that far. These were the worst kind of people that Jesus forgave and ate with and healed. I don't understand where the Pharisees were coming from. They couldn't understand it. And yet Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, it's the sick. I've come not to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. If grace isn't big enough for your thought on who the worst kind of sinner is, I'm afraid it's not big enough for you either. And it's not big enough for me. It's not big enough for any of us. You see, the Apostle Paul, he understood this. In fact, at one point he calls himself, I am the worst of sinners, he called himself. Wow. And he said this. He said, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. For all have sinned, all of us have sinned and fall short of God's glory. Not one of us is good enough. We've all got sin. And even just what you might can think as a minor sin, a little bit of sin is enough to stop us, prevent that relationship with God. It's not about the size of the sin. It's about the size of our God's grace. Because he goes on, he says, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And then he says, and all are justified freely by his grace. All in the same boat, all are justified freely. Justified just means declared righteous, seen righteous before God. God looks at us. And he doesn't see our sin. He sees the righteousness that Jesus put on us when he died for us on the cross. He sees us differently, all of us. And it's not about the size of sin. That doesn't come into it. His grace is big enough for everyone, for anyone who accepts it. So Jesus' approach with people was always one of compassion and mercy and grace, always. But in those same encounters that we've just seen, there were often people who were critical and judgmental and preferred religion and rules over grace and acceptance. So what is our response going to be when we encounter Jesus? And when we go into the world, are we going to offer compassion and grace and mercy and love and Jesus? Or are we going to come from the angle of religion and tradition, those two ugly sisters of the church? And they're as prevalent today as they've always been. Really, when you get bogged down in rules. There was an encounter that Jesus had with a crowd. It says, meanwhile, when a crowd of many thousands had gathered so that they were trampling on one another, that's a big crowd, Jesus began to speak first to his disciples, saying, be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees. So there's this huge crowd gathered. There's people there who were not his disciples, people from the outside of his group. But then Jesus just talks to his disciples and said, you guys, You need to be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees. I don't think he's saying you need to be on your guard against the Pharisees or against religious people. They're easy to spot. I think he's saying you need to be on guard against this in you. You need to be on your guard against this yeast. It spreads. It's in the Pharisees. It can easily spread to you and to me. And so he speaks to his disciples and said, where there are these crowds here, where there are the people, where there, when there are hurting and lost and broken people, there is this default position we take of judgment and religiosity and rules and saying, oh, we've got to be good enough. You've got to be on your guard against this. You've got to be on guard. And we come to church singing, this is amazing grace. This is unfailing love. But then in the next breath, we find ourselves maybe judging people's actions and feeling critical and superior. I'm not having a go at you this morning. I'm directing this at myself. In fact, I found myself doing this a couple of weeks ago. I was in Tesco. The first week we had the giveaway, I was in there buying bacon. And in front of me, there was a lady with two boys. And her boys were just being so unruly. They were just messing around and messing with the till and just being a real pains. And I was stood behind this lady thinking, you need to get control of your boys. You need to do better than this. You're not a very good parent, are you? I wouldn't allow this to happen. Did I offer to help her? No. I stood there judging her. The yeast of the Pharisees. It's not right. It's in me. And I guess it's in, maybe you're better than that. Maybe you're not like that. But maybe we don't say it out loud. But maybe you do have those thoughts too. Let's go back to our man who didn't swallow a fly. And we can see some things that Jesus mentions that we specifically need to guard against. In the Gospels of Matthew and I think Luke as well, Jesus makes various statements about Pharisees and about religious people. And they're called the woe statements. Woe. He says, woe to you Pharisees. Woe to you religious people. Woe. It's like you've got it wrong. You're in danger of messing up here. Woe to you. So we're going to find it in Luke chapter 11. Where a Pharisee has invited Jesus to come and eat with him. But this guy, this Pharisee, he gets annoyed because Jesus doesn't follow the cleansing ritual that he does and that his people do, and he thinks he should. And so Jesus says to him, now then, you Pharisees, you clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You foolish people, did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? Now, as for what is inside you, be generous to the poor, and everything will be clean for you. So, this first, I'm going to call it a religious trait. This first religious trait that we need to guard against, that we need to watch out for, is being hypocritical, okay? Religious trait number one, being hypocritical. That's, the word comes from, the Greek word, it just means actors with masks, okay? Being an actor with a mask, so being hypocritical. Cleaning the outside of the cup, doing good things for show, appearing righteous when there's hidden sin. Outward righteousness, but hidden sin. And I can't tell you the number of times that I've put on a show for church. Maybe you've done it too, where you've just had maybe a terrible week. You've been cross with your family. You've just had an argument with your wife. Been telling off the kids. You've shouted at the guy in Costa because he's given you a caffeinated coffee instead of decaf. And then you come into church and it's like butter wouldn't melt in your mouth. Maybe you've done it too. Yeah, how are you? Oh, very well, brother. Very well, sister. Mwah, mwah. All good, all good. Yes, my lovely darlings. Yes, we're all come to church. Jesus puts forward an answer for this way of thinking. He says, be generous to the poor. And I was thinking about this thing. What's that connection between being generous to the poor and making sure you're not being a hypocrite? Truthfully, what I've found is that when I live a life poured out for others, I don't have time to think about myself. I don't have time to think about how the way I'm looking. When I'm giving, not just of money, but of time, of comfort, giving what people need from me in any given moment, You'll stop focusing on you. There was a wise person, I'm not sure who it was, who first said it, but it's a great statement. He says, humility is not thinking of yourself less. No, not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. Don't spend so much time thinking about you. Think about other people. So he tells the Pharisee, you're hypocrites. Woe to you, hypocrites. But he's not done yet. He carries on. Woe to you. Go back one. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. And I love this image of this guy in all his gowns at his window box with a pair of nail scissors, cutting off 10% of his dill and his cumin and his mint and his thyme, his little herb box, and he's gathering it up, ready to give it as an offering. Here's my offering of my herbs. Okay, it just seems ridiculous, doesn't it? But what does Jesus say? He says, these you ought to have done. Actually, it's not wrong to be giving, you know, your tithe, your 10%. You know, we would encourage that, but not when you neglect the others. These you ought to have done without neglecting justice and mercy and faithfulness. And here's where he says it. You blind, you're straining out a gnat, but you're swallowing a camel. Being forensic in your obedience to the law, but neglecting justice and mercy. Now, being obedient to God is not bad. It's not wrong. You should do that, but not at the expense of understanding God's heart for people. Straining a gnat and swallowing a camel. Now, we live actually quite near the River Stour, and so we get a lot of flies in our house. And so we forever cover all our food with these things to stop the flies getting on food. But these Pharisees, they went one step further. They had these little strainers that they would put over their cups to stop flies getting in. And in fact, I think that they would actually drink it with the strainer in place. In case a fly has got in, they don't want to have any dead fly coming anywhere near them because that would defile them. They really took it to the nth degree. You're straining a gnat, but at the same time, you're swallowing a camel because you're not doing the important stuff. And in fact, Jesus is making a little joke here. He's being funny. He does this sometimes. Waiter, waiter, there's a gnat in my soup. Oh, let me remove the gnat because it seems to be annoying the camel that's in there as well. The Aramaic word for gnat, the word that Jesus would have used, is galma. And the Aramaic word for camel is gamla. You've got galma, gamla. So Jesus is going, I don't know, gamla, I don't know, galma. There's like a bit of a wordplay thing going on as well. Jesus was quite clever with his words. When you start looking at kind of the original Aramaic, you see actually pretty good and made it memorable for people to hear. So it's so easy for us to focus on some small aspect of our faith or our church life or our obedience in church. Yeah, I've come and I'm serving God with my leading worship, or I came and set up the chairs this morning, or even important stuff like I spent 2 hours in prayer, or I read my Bible every day this week. That's okay, that's all good. But be careful that we're not making a religion out of it. We're not straining the gnat and swallowing a camel because we're not loving our neighbor. We're not loving people like he taught us to. So, don't be hypocrites, he said. Don't be blind to the needs of others. But he's not done yet. Woe to you, Pharisees, because you love the most important seats in the synagogues and respectful greetings in the marketplace. So the third trait we have to watch out for is elevating yourself. Elevating ourselves, pride, creating a hierarchy in our mind. Okay, well, this person's down here. I'm up here, there's somebody up there, but one day I'm going to be above them as well. You know, and it's easy for us to do that, to create some kind of hierarchy, loving recognition and respect in church or at work. Now, in the temple, there was this bench that was sat in front of the ark that was containing the sacred scrolls, and only the important people were sat on that bench in front of the ark because they could be seen by everybody. They were really holy, yeah? These were the main guys. These were the dudes. These were the guys who made it. The guy sat at the front. You may not know this, but my wife, Fru, she used to be a professional dancer. She still can dance. I like to see you dance. Yeah, there she goes. But she used to do it for a living. She used to earn money dancing, contemporary dance. Not in a club, not doing all that pole stuff. That would be wrong. When she first became a Christian, she joined a Christian dance company, and she was touring around churches and big Christian festivals, dancing and doing her stuff. And I think it was one of the first festivals that she did, a big one, big Christian one. And at this festival, they had a big platform, and there was something called a platform party. A platform party where they had all these seats on the stage filled with various men, usually men, who were the various leaders of the movement or the camp. And they were just, they weren't involved in the service, they would just be sat there on the platform. I'm not sure why, a little bit weird maybe. Also, you've got to understand that back then there were people, and in fact still today, I guess, people would dance with flags in church. Okay, they would wave flags. And so there would be this bunch of flags, and sometimes the dancers would come out and wave flags. I remember this one time, this was the first time she went there, there was an old guy sat on the edge of the platform party, and he looked over at Fru. Fru was waiting in the wings to come on. And he started to do this gesture with his hands. And Fru was like, what? And he started to gesture. I think he wanted her to go and get a flag and come out on stage and wave it. But Fru didn't really get that. She didn't understand. So she picked up a flag and went and gave it to him and walked away again. And the guy was left there standing with the flag. What do I do now? I think that kind of dented his pride somewhat. We don't need to elevate ourselves. We don't need to do that. The Bible tells us to have the same mindset as Jesus, who humbled himself to death, even death on a cross. Religion in you wants to elevate yourself to a position of importance. Jesus in you puts others above yourself. The disciples were arguing about which of them was the greatest. Jesus got down on his knees and washed their feet. It's different. It's a different thing. Religion and Jesus. Coming towards the end now. But in the room with Jesus and this Pharisee, there are obviously some other religious leaders there, because it says to us, it says in the Bible that one of the other experts in the law answered him, "Teacher, when you say these things, you insult us as well. You're not just insulting the Pharisees, you're insulting us too." And I'm thinking, oh, you had to open your mouth, didn't you? So Jesus tells him, "You experts in the law, woe to you, because you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry, and you yourselves will not lift one finger to help them." So the fourth religious trait we need to guard against is burdening others. Burdening people with rules and traditions that we have adopted. Rules that we think are the only way to do it. Now, you can't be a Christian unless you do X, Y, Z. This is totally opposite to Jesus' response. He said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden. I will give you rest. My yoke is easy and my burden is light." The religious guy says, "My yoke is heavy and my burden is hard. But you've got to do it. This is the way." And Jesus says, no. Come to me. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. Religion would say you've got to change in order to be accepted by Jesus. Jesus says, no. I accept you as you are. I love you too much to leave you that way, but I accept you as you are. Come to me. And transformation came about. Sandra, would you mind just... Jesus' half-brother, James, he was a church leader in Jerusalem, and he wrote one of the books of the New Testament. It's a brilliant, brilliant book. And one of the many great things he said in it is, mercy triumphs over judgment. Now, I can imagine James must have seen his brother Jesus doing all sorts of things. He must have seen the Pharisees approach, piling things onto him, burdens, judging people, condemning people, trying to get people to change by judging them. And then he must have seen his brother Jesus' response. Loving people, compassion, accepting, grace, mercy. And he said, actually, this is how people change. This is how people are transformed. By showing acceptance. Jesus was all about loving people into better decisions and a better life. A few years ago, there was a study done in a city where all the best teachers from the various schools in that city were gathered together into a meeting. And at this meeting, these teachers were all told that they were some of the best teachers in the city. You guys are the best teachers. And they said, what we're going to do is we're going to give you all the best students from the city. We're going to put them into your classes to see what happens to their grades. The teacher's like, great, yeah, we'll love that. And so this happened. And for a year, they had all the best teachers teaching all the best students in his classes. And at the end of the year, these students got amazing results, far better than all the other results from the other students. And everybody said, well, of course they did. Well, of course they did. You chose the best students. You chose the students with the highest grade. And then the people doing the study said, no, we lied to you. They weren't the best students. They were just picked at random. Like, oh. Yeah, but you chose the best teachers to teach them. So that's why they got the best grades. No. We lied to you about that as well. We just picked the teachers at random. It was all done at random. And yet, you all got the best results. And what this study showed, it's a true study. What it showed was, you create an expectation and people will rise to it. You can create an expectation. And that's what Jesus did. He called out what was in people, what he saw. He called out their potential. He didn't look at their sin. He looked at who they could be. He didn't look at the way they'd messed up. He said, I see who you could be. I see who you could be. And what did they do? They elevated to the level that he saw them. On Friday evening, we had a bit of a party at our house. It was Israel and Jazz, who are part of this church. Rizal's out there right now, I guess. And Jazz, she's teaching kids right now. And Queen is their daughter. They've got a brilliant family. Israel's been working with this group of young men for the last 4 or 5 years, community sports team, doing football training with them and coaching and all sorts of things. He's been working for so long. And on Friday, we had them all together at our house for a barbecue. It was an amazing time, and Israel shared the gospel and somebody else shared the gospel to these guys. It was so, so good. And I want to really commend Jazz and Israel and the whole family for that work. Yeah, great. And let me tell you, what they're doing, making a difference. It makes a difference in those young guys' life. Why? Because mercy triumphs over judgment. Mercy triumphs. So what do we take away today? What do we take away from this series encounter? We need to encounter Jesus in all his various facets, his character and his ministry. We need to do that. But more importantly, we need to embody those same characteristics in us. When people meet us, when they encounter us, they should encounter Jesus and not religion, not tradition, not judgment, not condemnation, not hypocrisy, not rules, not regulations. It should look like love, mercy, compassion, healing, and hope, and freedom. Perhaps you can make a decision today to be mindful of the yeast of the Pharisees, that potential in us. To be mindful of that and to make sure we don't go down that road, but we take the other path. Be aware of the danger of us being this way. Perhaps, like David, we can pray, search me, O God, know my heart, Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive, religious way in me. And lead me in the way everlasting. Amen.